It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are at flank speed for Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. It's where you go for all of your podcasting needs. The easiest way to get the live stream itself or the rerun stream, everything is waiting for you there at HeadOn.live, including, I might add, access to the chat room. It's wide open right now. Pick out a screen name and a password and jump right in, at which point you will be greeted by the likes of Dowhead and Squeaky and more early arrivals as they wander in, since we don't have a tardy bill. Yep, it's a merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday. 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and whatever time it is when you start the podcast. You'll be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, is not willing to fold space into 109 degrees Fahrenheit in Northern California today. Nope, just not. You'll also be moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday.
Full speed ahead into that iceberg. We'll show it. If we can't beat it by ramming it, well, we can always nuke it.
Because that's, you know, the time in which we live. We have a president who wants to nuke something desperately.
Could we at least, like, maybe just reopen the nuclear testing program they got to set off a nuke in Russia a couple of weeks ago. It was a huge fireball. I don't see why we can't do that.
Oh, God. Mommy, there's a moron in the White House. Mommy. Yeah, I know. But that's what we get with our Titanic Tuesdays, in which we celebrate the Titanic intellect for which the white wing in this country, the Republicans, have become so not famous, but infamous. But the program always begins with thanks, and on this 27th day of August 2019, thanks go out to Jules and to our buddy Robert in Australia. Those are our subscribers for the 27th day of the month. Thank you very kindly. This day, this Tuesday, finds us in the midst of 6 days, six glorious days of fundraising-free radio. And that's because of the subscribers who make it possible for that to happen by knocking out about a week of fundraising out of any given month. So thanks so very much to all of our subscribers, and thanks to everybody who contributes ad hoc during the course of the program through the rest of the month to make sure that this all stays on the air. Titanic Tuesday. And we have plenty of examples. How's about Sean Duffy? Now, when I first heard that he was retiring from Congress after 8 terms, that's 16 years on the public teat, being as useless as teats on a boar hog, I thought, well, somebody's either been caught with a dead girl or a live boy, and he's off to hike the Appalachian Trail or perhaps spend more time with his family. Well, in an effort to dispel such speculation, Sean Duffy went on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to explain why it was that he was going to split Congress because congressing is such hard work, and he and his wife are expecting their 9th baby. That's 9, reminding me of you could take Rachel Campos Duffy. And remember, these are two people who met because they were on MTV's The Real World. He was on The Real World Boston, and she was on The Real World somewhere on the left coast, and they met, and it was a match made in TV heaven. And he went on and used his 15 minutes of fame or whatever it was to get himself into Congress as a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Republican. But there's the 9th kid reminding me of the woman who showed up on You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx that time and said she had something like 9 or 10 children. And her answer was, well, I love kids. Groucho responded, well, I love my cigar, but I take it out once in a while. Yeah, apparently Mrs. Campos Duffy's reproductive area is a clown car. Oh, that was mean, Bob. Anyway, so they've made another baby, the Duffys have. And this one is going to be, the minute this baby is born, it's going to require open heart surgery. Because even at full term, well, the baby's going to be born with some sort of horrible, horrible, horrible heart birth defect. My heart goes out to the little infant. What a terrifying way to begin life. Because one of the things about newborns is that we really don't have that great of an understanding about their ability to feel pain. Now, granted, a Republican, on any day of the week, they'll tell you that a little teeny tiny wad of cells, not even at the looks like a sea monkey stage, can feel pain. I'm pretty sure a born baby can. But they're going to bring this baby into the world and immediately subject it to... Well, look, in the medical world, and I'm talking about medical terminology here, surgery is described as an insult. It is an insult to the body. Way back in 1997 or so, when my mother lay dying, it was explained to us that at 72 years old, she had withstood the first surgery that the surgeon botched and necessitated a second surgery. And they calmly explained to us that at her age and given her strength level, that while she had withstood the first surgical insult, she had not been able to withstand the second surgical insult. And consequently, she spent the next 6 months with a garden hose down her throat breathing for her and died in horrible agony in June of 1997. And so the idea of a surgical insult, that scientific term, is real. But Sean and Rachel Duffy are going to subject that poor little infant to that surgical insult. And, okay. So he went on Fox to make it clear, because when a Republican Congress critter quits, we all naturally assume now that they've been caught in flagrante delicto, which is Latin for bed, with someone who is not their upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing, Christian, traditional family values, marriage, spouse. Congressman Duffy wanted us to understand that that was not the case. No, of course not.
I'm sure a lot of people, given the fact that we've talked about health care for the last couple of years on this program and all across dinner tables around America, a lot of people are going, okay, well, what are they going to do about health insurance? You know, you've got health insurance right now. What is your plan? Because then the child would have a pre-existing condition, I would imagine, if you're going to switch health care providers, right?
That's a tough question there coming from, I don't know, I can never keep them squared up. That's either Brian Kilmeade or Steve Ducey. I can't tell them. They all look the same to me over on Fox. But it's a good question. Congressman Duffy, your fetus has a pre-existing condition. What will you do? Whatever will you do? Do. Because you see, Sean Duffy is going to take advantage of the pre-existing conditions coverage that exists thanks to the existence itself of the Affordable Care Act. That's good for Mr. and Mrs. Duffy. It's also good for millions of Americans who would be really and truly shit out of luck because they're not retiring with a congressional pension or the ability, as Sean Duffy will, to pay for COBRA coverage for 18 months. That means they pay the entire amount of the insurance coverage. And, of course, Sean Duffy is from Wisconsin, and Wisconsin does not have expanded Medicaid. Mm-mm. So good for them for being responsible and taking care of their baby-to-be. Here's the problem. Back when he had a chance, Sean Duffy said he would not vote to repeal the legislation, the Affordable Care Act, unless a better proposal was in place. In a matter of mere months, Sean Duffy made a liar of himself because he voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act in total with no replacement whatsoever, just casting his constituents and everybody else in the United States of America to the wolves that run the for-profit healthcare industry. And he did it again. and again and again. What? Let's see. This is August. 3 months ago, Sean Duffy voted against a bill that came up in the new in the Democratic Majority House called the Protecting Americans with Pre-Existing Conditions Act of 2019. And he's been as silent as a graven image on the lawsuit being pursued by a bunch of evil attorneys general and heartily endorsed by the Trump regime to throw out the Affordable Care Act in its totality. A Republican federal district judge in Texas held that the Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional. And left up to him, it would, well, be already thrown out. But because we have an appeal system in the U.S. federal court system, it was heard by the 5th United States Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. And that's a gang of right-wing judicial thugs as well. And they kind of signaled from the bench that they were inclined to throw it out, too. So there's every possibility that the case will be declared unconstitutional. In other words, the lower court judge will be upheld, and the court will and the case will then head on to Washington, D.C., where it will be heard by old Balls and Strikes John Roberts and shoot the black kid in the back of the head at 30 paces, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, and of course, Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer, and still can't explain how some several hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt miraculously disappeared once he was nominated to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States. But hey, who among us doesn't have a shadowy benefactor to make all our debts disappear? If you were counting, that's five. That's one more than the four on the other side of the court. So unless old Balls and Strikes John Roberts votes to uphold the case that uphold the program that he has already once before said was constitutional, then, well, a whole lot of Americans, including the Duffies, will be, and I'm searching for the complicated legal term of art here, fucked. Yeah. But they got enough money in the kitty, the Duffies do, to pay for that brutally expensive COBRA coverage. Sure. Sure they do.
You've thought of all this already. Yeah, I have. So just so you know, members of Congress don't get health insurance for life. I know you might have seen an email to that effect. So I can get on a COBRA plan after I leave Congress for 18 months. Okay. We pay the full boat for that so we can transition. And with the condition of the baby, mm-hmm. We have that complete coverage. But, yeah, you know, you're right. I had to look at that and make sure right. that with the open heart surgery, we had coverage to make sure that, you know, we could pay for that. And we've got that worked out. Thank God that's not a consideration. As we look to the birth.
Yeah, thank God, Sean. Not thank Democrats. Certainly not thank Republicans, because you would not have that coverage if it was up to you yourself. But then again, Sean Duffy probably has the money laying around just to pay ice-cold cash for the surgery and the care. You're right, Steve in New York. Steve in New York, a member of the Fraternity of Steves, says, I sense an igamfu moment. Precisely. I got mine. Fuck you. I mean, how? There's no shame. I mean, he's leaving Congress. Could he at least have thrown the country a bone and said, "Boy, I sure did fuck up when I voted to take the same health care away from millions of Americans that we're going to use to have open heart surgery on our newborn baby." Nah, you know why? Because he's not going to be unemployed for very long. There will probably be a lobbying firm standing right outside the door of his office the last time it closes behind him. And they'll say, "Sign here." And then the lobbyist will walk away through the waving fields of alfalfa. And so while he may be paying for COBRA coverage, A, it won't be for 18 months, and B, he'll be on somebody else's health care plan, and the coverage will just roll over because, again, the Affordable Care Act protects people with pre-existing conditions like, heart defects that develop in the womb. All of this, of course, is lost on Sean Duffy, who represents a district, by the way, that encompasses the great Northwoods of Wisconsin, where I have a great number of friends who don't have the ability to just reach into their wallets and pay for 18 months of COBRA insurance coverage and say, "Hell, it's only money." Yeah, you're right, Steve. Steve says, "This is pure sociopathy, Bob." Well, it's a Republican, isn't it? And even under the best of circumstances, let's remember, because it's Titanic Tuesday and Titanic intellect, that given an opportunity to opine on it, Sean Duffy would no doubt, because he's not going to stop being a godforsaken Republican when he walks away with all that cash falling out of his pockets. Sean Duffy, given an opportunity, would rail, I tell you, rail against the communism that is Medicare for all. Because everybody should just have pockets overflowing with money. Like Sean Duffy does. 9 kids. Yeah. Well, good luck to Mr. and Mrs. Duffy. Oh, and this morning, I got up and engaged in my filthy little morning habit. Of course I did. Where I saw the morning zoo crew there once again give away free in-kind advertising time to the Joe Biden campaign. Because, of course, they ran another campaign video in this one, and it's sad as hell. There's no getting around the fact that Joe Biden has been through more than his fair share of grief and heartache in his life. But the video talks about him knowing the heartache of losing his wife and children in a car accident, of losing another adult son to cancer. Uh, and it was a real heartstring tugger. But you know what you can do? I mean, granted, it's TV, and they don't think this way. If you don't have some video to play, they're not interested in doing the story, hardly. But they could have just done a reader about it. They did not have to run his ad for free. But since that's all the rage, let's listen to another ad. Amy McGrath has released a new ad against Moscow Mitch McConnell, and she's focusing on the hard-working coal miners who are blockading a railroad train. And more than that in particular, the hard-working coal miners who went to Washington, miners with black lung whose every breath is a struggle, if you've, and most people haven't, to see someone, and it's terminal, black lung. There's no cure. All you can do is palliate and ameliorate. And it is heartrending to see someone suffer like that from having a lungs full of toxic coal dust, which incidentally the coal industry knew about for decades before there was ever anything like black lung compensation, and fought black lung compensation tooth and nail, because working people to a coal company are less value than mule. There's always somebody else willing to step up and be a coal miner, at least around here. And there's legislation to restore the pensions and disability benefits of miners with black lung. And just like the two bills that came over from the House and are sitting in a pool of congealed innocent blood on Moscow Mitch's desk, the Miners Protection Act is sitting in a puddle of coal dust blackened phlegm on his desk. In case you were wondering, Chinless Mitch's desk is a hateful, nasty place. And Chinless Mitch, of course, doesn't think much of democracy, because he's not even going to allow a vote on the Miners Protection Act. Nope. And so, this from the McGrath campaign.
It was a 10-hour bus ride. We were coal miners with black lung disease, going to see our senator, Mitch McConnell, to try and save our disability benefits. 10 hours on a bus, and we got to see him for all of 1 minute. My stepfather and grandfather died of black lung. Now I can lose my son. Mitch McConnell let the coal companies walk away from us. And then after 1 minute, he did too.
Our coal miners risk their lives to fuel our country and our growth into a world power. I'm Amy McGrath, and we owe them. I learned in the Marines to leave no one behind. But after 34 years in Washington, Mitch McConnell left our coal miners behind years ago. The question for anyone in Congress is, which side are you on? I approve this message because I'm on the side of miners and their families, and I'll never walk away.
Pretty tough ad. Here's the thing, though. She may say she'll not walk away from the coal miners, but the coal miners will walk away from the voting booth having yet again cast another vote for Moscow Mitch McConnell. Now, I don't have a Ouija board or a crystal ball or a seeing eye dog. But as Shakespeare said, what's past is prologue. And the past says that no matter how many sleazy, filthy, revolting things he does to them, that people like coal miners in Kentucky will go and vote for him. And for that matter, I mean, Black Lung is terminal. And remember, Moscow Mitch plays the long game. And the long game says, hell, by the time November 2020 gets here, a bunch of them coal miners might not even be alive. And Amy McGrath's out there trying to get them to vote for her. The dead people don't vote. Unless and we decide they do. Cynical? Absolutely. But it's hard to buck, well, reality. And the reality is that hard-working coal miners have returned him to the Senate time after time. I remember when, why can I never remember that woman's name? She was running against him last time, back in 2014. And she was kind of running on a Republican light ticket. But still, they had a lot of Democratic luminaries and dignitaries come down there and stump speech for her. Didn't make a hill of beans. She lost anyway. Because those same coal miners and people from up the holler in eastern Kentucky and whatnot eagerly and enthusiastically voted for Mitch McConnell because he was going to protect the little fetuses. And he was going to protect our gun rights. I have yet to see a firearm that... Yes, Allison Lundergan Grimes. Thank you. Thank you. Steve in New York serving as the ad hoc horn research committee for the evening. Allison Lundergan Grimes, yep. And she got beaten like a borrowed coal company mule. Because, well, Kentuckians, given a choice, Kentuckians will take a real Republican over a light one any day of the week. But that's a powerful, powerful ad. And the problem is, it's powerful, but is it powerful enough to overcome the inherent power of Chinless Mitch's incumbency, coupled with Chinless Mitch's deal with a Russian oligarch to make some aluminum in Kentucky? And everybody's going to have, it's going to be Frisbees and wheat checks for everybody because we're going to make Russian aluminum in Kentucky. Because jobs. Jesus, that shit pisses me off. Yeah, well, so what, Bob? What doesn't? By the way, coal, climate change, the Amazon's still on fire. And Jair Bolsonaro is as big a dick, possibly bigger, than Donald Trump. You know, in a way, well, earlier today discussing, what is it, Hurricane Dorian? Yeah, Hurricane Dorian has a photo in its closet of a much weaker hurricane. Had to do that. Hurricane Dorian is bearing down on Puerto Rico, and Nitwit Nero declared,
"Does it ever end? There's another hurricane coming. Does it ever end?"
Jesus. Because it's about him. It's not about Puerto Rico. And then he went on to lie some more, because lying is what Trumps do best. It was in a tweet a little after noon today.
Wow, yet another big storm heading to Puerto Rico.
Hey, look, he's the nation's weatherman.
Will it ever end? Congress approved $92 billion for Puerto Rico last year, an all-time record of its kind for, quote, anywhere, unquote.
Will whatever end? Hurricanes? Probably not, Chlamydia Claudius. Probably not. It's one of those things that goes with living on this here little blue-green time machine hurtling in its elliptical fashion, helical fashion, through the universe.
Will it ever end? Well, it might, if they'd let me nuke a hurricane. Here I am. Nuke you like a hurricane. I love that song.
But no, Puerto Rico has not received $92 billion. Congress allocated $42 billion. But as far as obligations for federal agencies, the obligation only extends to about $20 billion of it. The other $22 billion, you know, ciphering, is just sitting around waiting for Trump to declare some more national emergency.
Because we've got to build some wall with that hurricane money. I mean, Puerto Rico, it's an island, it's surrounded by water. What could they possibly do with another $22 billion?
So, in addition, $271 million disappeared from the Department of Homeland Security, including the FEMA Disaster Relief Fund. No, it wasn't for the wall. It was to build more concentration camps for suffering migrants. The Trump regime didn't even ask Congress for permission. And the Department of Homeland Security is going to lose funding for Coast Guard work as well. FEMA is going to lose money that was budgeted for preparing for natural disasters, like the one bearing down on Puerto Rico right now.
You know, maybe we could use some of that $22 billion for some nukes. And we could nuke that hurricane. But they won't let me. They won't let me. Because they don't realize what a great brain I have.
And yet, even with a hurricane bearing down, I can just imagine, and granted, I confess, I'm imagining, that Trump is out there wishing he could have a forest fire as big as the one in the Amazon.
I could really show him, I could show him my splendid super brain, because we could get people to rake the forest and the rest of it wouldn't burn, and everybody would know how smart I am.
Ugh! Because he rakes it. But oddly enough, he hasn't told Jair Bolsonaro to go rake the goddamned Amazon. And Jair Bolsonaro, in turn, well, he wants the Amazon to burn. We need to be clear about that. He likes the fact that the Amazon is burning. Because for him, the climate crisis is not real any more than it's real for, you know, venereal Vespasian in the White House. And because Emmanuel Macron said something not kind, or deemed to be not kind, about Brazil, and what Emmanuel Macron said was that our planet is on fire, which, and Jair Bolsonaro, being the fascist prick that he is, the tyrannical asshole that he is, took that to mean that Emmanuel Macron felt that the Amazon belongs to planet Earth, the people of the planet. And so he deemed that to be a dire insult, and when the G7 nations ponied up a paltry pissant $22 million to help put out the fires, Jair Bolsonaro said, no, thank you, until you apologize to me. And I'm sure he had his little fascist chin jutting out when he did it. And this is the problem with concepts of sovereignty. Because this is the sort of thing that requires a worldwide response. Those fires could be put out. A consortium of nations could, with the cooperation of Brazil, fly in the tankers, dump the water, and eventually get the fires under control. But one, Jair Bolsonaro doesn't want that, because he's acting at the behest of loggers and ranchers, and he's also acting out of a dire hatred of indigenous peoples. And so he can't understand that the Amazon means something for the overall health of not just his nation, but the world. And if he can barbecue some indigenous people, he's happy about that too. That's oh so true. Ron in the soon-to-be frozen, refrozen north, we hope, I mean, climate crisis. Ron's not in the soon-to-be-frozen north. Ron's wandering around the highways and byways and back roads of almost level west by Cold Trump Juniastan. Ron says, if the asshole king's brain, that would be Trump's, was C4, he wouldn't have enough to blow his nose. And that is absolutely true. Ron got near one of those cancer-causing windmills, like I said last night. Make sure you go to the doctor when you get back to civilized Canada and make sure that you don't get any of that there windmill cancer, Ron. Ron in Raleigh, uh-oh. Tell them the story about the bed bugs, Bob. We're going to get to the bed bugs, Ron. We'll get to the bed bugs. But right now we're in the Amazon, where some of the most powerful, wealthy nations on Earth, the G7, ponied up $22 million to fight the Amazon fires if Jair Bolsonaro will let them do it. But again, as noted, Bolsonaro is saying that he won't accept the free money unless it comes with an abject, belly-crawling apology from Emmanuel Macron. But here's the thing about those $22 million. Know how much Netflix paid to be able to keep streaming Friends, a sitcom about white 20-somethings in New York that was popular 20 years ago? Netflix ponied up $100 million. Because everybody loves Friends. Everybody doesn't love the Amazon. I mean, there's snakes and spiders, the size of fire hydrants in the Amazon. And hostile natives who shoot at you with blowguns and bows and arrows that are tipped with deadly poison from frogs. Rachel never did anything like that to Ross. I think Leonardo DiCaprio has already pledged a fourth of what was pledged by the United States, Germany, Japan, Canada, France, the UK, and who's the G7th? Yeah. Inspiring, isn't it? Specifically, what Bolsonaro said was, "We cannot accept that President Macron unleashes improper and unreasonable attacks on the Amazon. It's on fire, you fuckwit!" Talking about the Amazon being our house being on fire, that's not an improper and unreasonable attack, nor disguises his intentions behind the idea of an alliance of countries for the G7 to save the Amazon as if we were a colony or a no man's land. Other heads of state sympathize with Brazil. After all, respect for the sovereignty of any country is the least that can be expected in a civilized world. Well, bub, as the uncivilized leader of a country, you ain't got a lot of room to talk. And then, Bolsonaro, also, because apparently he went to Trump University, said sleazy things about Emmanuel Macron's spouse. And he did it on Facebook. Really? Oh, for pity's sakes. Unreasonable and gratuitous attacks on the Amazon, Bolsonaro bitterly complained. And then said something, and said something about the fact that Macron's wife is 66 years old. See, Bolsonaro is married to a young trophy wife. And somebody posted a meme on his Facebook page saying that Macron was jealous of Bolsonaro's spouse. Bolsonaro responded, "Don't humiliate the guy, ha ha." Sometimes I miss dueling. I just do. Arguably, it had its place. Macron could go over and slap Bolsonaro with a white kid skin glove and they could meet on the field of honor. And somebody could make sure that Bolsonaro's pistol wouldn't fire. Because you got to remember, the Amazon is on fire because Bolsonaro despises the planet he lives on. If he were an American, he would be a maggot teabagger Republican, seeing the planet only as a vehicle for the acquisition of further wealth. He seems to think that, well, they're all nihilists, these types. And it doesn't much matter what happens to the planet in 100 years because, well, Jair Bolsonaro will be dead by then. But he will have died filthy fucking rich. But he's only president of Brazil because of an ginned up, engineered right-wing movement similar to the Trump train here in America that happened after the legitimately elected president of Brazil was deposed in a kangaroo court proceeding over so-called corruption, when corruption is the lifeblood of a fascist pissant like Jair Bolsonaro. Flavio, having been born there, responds via email, "It's on fire, you twit. When smoke blots out the sun over a megalopolis the size of Mexico City or Tokyo, as my hometown, Sao Paulo, and turns day into night at 3 p.m., that's an emergency. Sampa, as it is popularly called, is normally cloudy and dingy. But not like that." Is Italy the G7th? Ron in the hills guesses Italy. I'd probably go in on that guess. Brother Deacon Asa, in regard to Trump tweeting, "Will it ever end?" says, "Perhaps you can use your oratory and word-knowing powers to convince the captain of USS Trumptanic to use that tow line of his to move Puerto Rico to a place in the big, huge ocean, to a spot where it's not in the way of all these hurricanes. Problem solved. You're welcome." Oh, if only. If only. Todd in South Carolina stands, says, "We all understand the evil that Bolsonaro represents. If no, now you know. He, too, used bots to bolster his campaign. All these evil fuckers had a powwow with Russia. In addition to the indigenous population being wiped out, non-Spanish heritage, what about all the natural medicines? Truly evil. Because, as I pointed out the other day, the conquest of the so-called New World is far from over. Living here in our little bubbles in the so-called developed world, we forget that there are wild places yet left on the planet. Places untrod by human feet. Some of those places that are on fire in the Amazon rainforest, the last time they had human feet on them, before now, they were human feet that transformed that forest into a vast food supply system without ever having to burn anything down. Pure genius. But because so many of the inhabitants of the region were wiped out by white European diseases, We never really got a chance to fully understand the depth of that brilliance. And oh, what we lost. This is the curse of having had a few anthropology and archaeology classes along the way. You get a sense for what was lost. Yep, the SS Trumptanic is full steam ahead this evening toward that iceberg. Really, really is. One more observation, says Flavio. Sao Paulo is farther from the Amazon than Athens is from London. Let that sink in for a moment. And yet it is blanketed by smoke from the fires in the Amazon. These are the moments when one wonders if we really can survive ourselves. Tell them about the bed bugs. Said Ron in Raleigh. One of my least favorite people on the planet is Brett Stevens. Brett made a career as a deputy editor over at the Wall Street Journal out of downplaying campus rape and declaring that the climate crisis was no big deal. He makes, it's his rise that high at the Wall Street Journal was an example of, you know, the worst and most pernicious kind of wingnut welfare. And they gave him a Pulitzer for it, which made the New York Times yearn mightily for him. Yesterday on Moran Monday, we focused on a homegrown Moran by the name of Hoppy Kercheval, another climate change denier, who is a shameless hack and flack for the coal and fracking business here in West Virginia. Well, this moment, a great moment in bad journalism, and even more so, worse ethical conduct. We have to go to New York City for that. Because, and it's kind of a mystery. So there's an associate professor of media and public affairs at George Washington University in D.C. His name is David Karpf, K-A-R-P-F. And he sent out an innocuous little tweet. I mean, nothing to it. It had all of 9 likes. Until this story broke, I had never heard of David Karpf. I dare say you hadn't either. Well, David Karpf sent out a tweet. And it was kind of funny-ish. Someone tweeted, and Karpf subtweeted it. Stuart A. Thompson tweeted, "Breaking, there are bed bugs in the New York Times newsroom." Actually, there are 2 bed bug stories. This is weird. We've never had, in 15 years of broadcasting on this network, we have never had a situation in which we had 2 bedbug stories on one night. Maybe this isn't the bedbug story that Ron had in mind. Maybe Ron was thinking about the fact that the adipose jiggling wad of anger and insecurity and resentment that is the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue had to take to Twitter this morning to say it's fake news that there's bed bugs at Doral. Because, well, it was, I think it's called the Streisand effect. The more you talk about it, but so is the other bed bug story. There's a case that goes back 3 or 4 years of a guy who checked into Trump's Doral sleazy little golf course and got eaten up by bed bugs. Most people aren't bothered by them. They're a nuisance, but they're a nuisance because they're gross, not because. But if you have an allergic reaction to bed bugs, it is misery. And this guy stayed at Doral and got eaten up by bed bugs. And so when Donnie Dipshit started blathering at the G7 about how he was going to host the G7 in the United States next year at Doral, naturally people, including myself, thought, wait a minute, Doral, isn't that the place with the goddamn bed bugs? And yes, it is. And by the way, they settled the case.
I'm going to try it. I'll win it. I never lose a case. Oh, we settled? Okay.
Yeah, they didn't want to take it to trial because bed bugs at the Doral would have probably put paid to the Doral because, like everything else Donald Trump touches, the Doral is hemorrhaging money, which is why he wants to hold the G7 at the Doral. Why you'd ever want to own a golf course named after a second-tier brand of cigarettes is beyond me, but oh well, never mind. But he got it.
There's no, it's fake news. There's no bed bugs.
So that's bed bug story number one. And of course, the lesson is entirely lost on the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, the dictator of Doral, that by talking about it on Twitter, he made it even more notorious. You know, in the vein of Shakespeare saying, he thinks he doth protest too much. So that's bedbug story one. Bedbug story two, however, has to do with David Karp, again, Associate Professor of Media and Public Affairs at George Washington University. And Stuart A. Thompson, who has a blue check mark on Twitter, said, breaking, there are bed bugs in the New York Times newsroom, like three floors of the newsroom. And feeling a little snarky, David Karp tweeted, the bed bugs are a metaphor. No, the bed bugs are a metaphor. The bedbugs are Bret Stephens. Because David Karp, being an expert as he is, has spent a lot of time deconstructing the very poor work of Bret Stephens, Pulitzer Prize winner. Apparently, the year that they awarded Bret Stephens a Pulitzer, the entire Pulitzer committee had spent the previous week on a nonstop bender drinking cheap tequila right out of the bottle with a swirly straw. Shit'll make you crazy. Sorry about the interruption to the stream. Don't know why. So the bedbugs are a metaphor. The bedbugs are Bret Stephens. Okay. Again, that tweet got 9 likes. that tweet did not at Brett Stevens, but Brett Stevens somehow found out about it. Somebody tattled. Now, by way of just keeping up with history, Brett Stevens once said on Twitter, with his blue check mark, "The right to offend is the most precious right. Without it, free speech is meaningless." That's what Charlie Hebdo was about. Remember Charlie Hebdo? And Brett Stevens has run with great crocodile tears to the defense of maggots and other vermin when college campuses have said, no, we'd prefer that you not come here and incite a riot. And has actually written that the biggest threat facing our society today is the stifling of free speech on college campuses. And has opined at great length on that topic. Right? Free speech. Brett Stevens, free speech advocate. Mm-hmm. Well, when that innocuous little bedbug joke went out, Brett Stevens became irate. "I'm Brett Stevens. I have a Pulitzer Prize. I cash a wingnut welfare check at the New York Times every 2 weeks, whether I need it or not. I get to sit across the desk and talk to that lovely Stephanie Rule over on MSNBC anytime I want to. Bedbug?
I think not." He didn't say any of those things, but because I'm telepathic, I heard them inside his head. Well, instead, Brett Stevens wrote an email. He went to the trouble of finding the email for a guy he didn't even know, did it within hours of the all of 9 likes tweet going out. And here's the fun part. He tried to get Professor Karpf fired for doing it. Remember, we're talking about Brett Stevens here, free speech advocate. And he wrote to Professor Karpf, copying the provost of his college. "Dear Dr. Karpf, someone, how brave of you not to point out who, just pointed out a tweet you wrote about me calling me a bedbug. I'm often amazed about the things supposedly decent people are prepared to say about other people, people they've never met, on Twitter. I think you've set a new standard. I would welcome the opportunity for you to come to my home, meet my wife and kids, talk to..." Wait a minute, so he's going to use his wife and kids as a human shield. Let's keep track here. "I would welcome the opportunity for you to come to my home, meet my wife and kids, talk to us for a few minutes, and then call me a bedbug to my face. That would take some genuine courage and intellectual integrity on your part. I promise to be courteous no matter what you have to say. Maybe it will make you feel better about yourself. Please consider..." consider this a standing invitation. You're more than welcome to bring your significant other cordially, Bart Stevens. I was really looking forward to doing this story. Looking forward to doing this program. But in the last 2 minutes, I've got a whole bunch of emails telling me that the audio here has become as that of a robot. Jimmy in New Zealand says it sounds like a BAT tape misaligned. Stand by. I mean, all I can. Whatever in the world could be going on. Thanks, Andy. That helps. It's the same sound as when you were on the road in that hotel in the audio. I have no idea. I haven't touched anything. Everything is extra, super duper, double plus normal. Oh. Stand by.
Okay, so I've rebooted the unit, restarted the streaming interfaces, and I don't know. Anything? There, I'm sending some very frustrated speech. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Back on. Sounds good. That's great. It sure would be nice to know what caused that. Ah, the glorious world of... Okay. Thank you, Stephen, New York, sounding A-OK. Glory. I don't know where I was in the Brett Stevens story. Is it worth going back over? Thanks, Todd. Golden. Appreciate it. Thank you, Darlene and Billable Rick. Loud and clear. Sounds good. Thank you. Jim says, I need some A200 or Blue Star. What? No bag balm? And Billable Rick says, you shouldn't have done the bed bug story. They beat you. Scott says, sounds fine on horn. Tune in is questionable. Tune in's a little O-slay on the uptake A sometimes, so that's not at all surprising. Billable Rick said, Brett has somehow sabotaged your stream to prevent you from doing this story about the bed bugs because he really is a bed bug. There really are bed bugs in your machine. No, this is new, and it's a sealed unit, and the cats haven't been back here. Oy vey. Yeah. But the irony is delightful, isn't it? So anyway, Brett Stevens... And he's really such a pimple. Brett Stevens started this firestorm by trying to get a guy whose words he didn't like fired from his academic position. And then, when the blowback started, yes, absolutely, a cowbell for Billable Rick on the bed bug. Yeah, TuneIn's muffled and tinny. That's because TuneIn picks up off of the White Rose stream, and sometimes when the White Rose stream is interrupted like it was, it won't come back with all of the with the high quality stream. Go figure. But let's just do the denouement to the Brett Stevens story and have done with it. He's a drama queen. So when he started getting massive amounts of blowback, he all of a sudden up and quit Twitter. He said, Twitter truly is a sewer. I quit. Now, he's done this before. The last time they did it, they made it a front-page story on the New York Times. Brett Stevens quits Twitter, calls it sewer. Well, thank you. Ron in the Hills and Hollers says, I love the newly refreshed sound. And Brother Deacon Asa says, Scott is correct. White Rose Society has defaulted to 8K. Just bizarre. Asa says, I think it does that when your upstream bitrate is choked by the ISP. The ISP should not be throttling me. I mean, I get a whole meg up for a frightful amount of money every month. But there's not supposed to be any throttling. Looks like time for a tech support call. Beautiful. Hey. Nah, I don't think it's right-wing hackers going after progressive programs, Flavio. This is just shitty infrastructure in West Virginia, I suspect. But Precious Brett quit the Twitter because Precious Brett got caught trying to suppress someone's free speech over a comment referring to him as a bed bug. Darlene asks, you implying Brett Stevens is a snowflake? Absolutely. He's the flakiest of snowflakes. But Dr. Karp is getting the last word. He said, Stevens not only thinks I should be ashamed of what I wrote, He thinks that I should also get in trouble for it. That is an abuse of his power. Stevens, meanwhile, said, my message speaks for itself. His tweet was dehumanizing and totally unacceptable. I wasn't trying to get him in professional trouble. Managers should be aware of the way in which their people, their professors or journalists, interact with the rest of the world. Oh, I wasn't trying to get him in trouble. I was just tattling. Using dehumanizing rhetoric like bedbugs or analogizing people to insects is always wrong. We can do better. We should be the people on social media that we are in real life. And then, hauling the New York Times pogo stick out of the broom closet, he leapt up onto the cross and said, Twitter is a sewer. It brings out the worst in humanity. I sincerely apologize for any part I've played in making it worse than to anyone I've ever hurt. And then he went and cashed the check. Because, see, he had to quit Twitter and delete his account because people had already caught him doing far worse. Dr. Karp said, you need to work very hard to find a tweet that obscure and then work harder to find the writer's email and their provost's email to CC them too. I would have treated this as an opportunity for conversation and dialogue if he hadn't CC'd my provost, which was clearly an attempt to threaten me with punishment. I'd be happy to have a dialogue not just about the tenor of Twitter comments, but also about power and how to appropriately use it. But I assume he won't want to talk. He ought to be embarrassed, said Dr. Karp. I teach strategic political communication, and we will certainly be talking about this case in my class on Wednesday. That'd be a fun class to be in at GWU come tomorrow. But this is oh so typical of the crybaby white wing. They'll cry for a professor's head on a platter for hurting their tender and delicate fifis, and then turn around and defend the most odious, hateful, violent conduct to be found. I mean, Stevens, and he doesn't like being compared to an insect, Stevens, this pampered panjandrum, I can't call him a pissant. He doesn't like being compared to insects. This shit weasel. How about vertebrates, Brett? Can we compare you to a shit weasel? Is more than happy to defend guys who commit rape on college campuses. Perfectly happy to defend people like Milo Yiannopoulos who go to college campuses with the express intent of inciting a riot, which I might remind folks is still illegal, incitement to riot. And will declare that the flag is falling if the Proud Boys don't get to beat the fuck out of whomever they decide needs the fuck beaten out of them. As Billable Rick points out, Brett Stevens, for all of his Pulitzerness and his high-toned knowing which fork to use with the shrimp bullshit, missed a potential literary reference in the tweet. Don't you remember the Kafka short story, The Metamorphosis, in which Gregor Samsa became a bug and was tormented by the maid, the charwoman? Don't you remember the movie, The Fly, in which the transformed person plaintively cries, "Help me! Help me!" Stevens is an insect, for fuck's sake, says Billable Rick. Rules for thee, but not for me, says Brett Stevens. Brett Stevens should not be at the New York Times. He should probably be working at the National Review, that ancient monument to white supremacy. He should have a gig at Wingnut Daily, or that website that rhymes with light and fart. But no, Wingnut Welfare will keep him where he is for the rest of his natural born days. And trying to get a man fired, a professor fired, won't keep Brett Stevens from sitting there across the desk from Stephanie Ruhle and opining about the sorry state of free speech in America. Because now, Brett Stevens, having been stone cold busted, well, Brett Stevens is the victim. And speaking of bugs, real ones, not to induce any hysteria, but if you're, I'm going to tell my buddy, my buddy Bo up in Massachusetts about this. And Terry and Amherst, where only the H is silent, and other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in the greater New England area, Darlene in Connecticut, pay attention. It, by the way, I had a nice note from Terry a minute ago. Terry said, "World powers, Bob, world freaking powers, world weaklings." This is about the Amazon. "World good-for-nothings if they can't stop Bolsonaro. My God. How can this be happening? You, Bob, are the only media person I've heard who has dared to lay out the total tragedy of losing the Amazon. Thank you." I wish I wasn't, Terry. But you can't expect a bunch of millionaires to sit around worrying about the past of a bunch of people who weren't even white. Even if it turns out that they were some of the most brilliant human beings to ever walk the planet. Because see, there's no, that's not a big dollar for the billionaire class that owns the for-profit media in this country. But no, bugs. There are some nasty-ass mosquitoes flying around New England. They've been found in Delaware. Delaware has something called sentinel chickens. I know, Delaware's not New England. Delaware has sentinel chickens. And the chickens are tested periodically by biologists for mosquito-borne illnesses. And the sentinel chickens in Delaware have tested positive for something called EEE. Or E. It stands for Eastern Equine Encephalitis. It is a rare, and we hope stays that way, virus. But a 59-year-old Massachusetts woman has died. And two men over 60 and one man between 19 and 30 have also been diagnosed with Eastern equine encephalitis. It was the first, when the first case was confirmed earlier this month in Massachusetts, it was the first in Massachusetts since 2013. But the mosquitoes that bear the virus have also been found in Florida and New York and Delaware. Back in July in Orange County, Florida, citizens were warned about an increase in mosquito activity and that their sentinel chickens, we're learning something new here, Florida's sentinel chickens had tested positive for Eastern equine encephalitis, which apparently ain't necessarily limited to the equines. In New York, they found a pair of mosquito pools in a swamp about 20 miles north of Syracuse in West Monroe. They found EEE there. 23 Massachusetts communities have been declared at critical EEE risk, 22 at high risk, and 52 at moderate risk. Communities, not counties. If it doesn't kill one, EEE can cause permanent brain damage in human beings, seizures, mental impairment, personality changes in people who survive it. The best way to prevent it is to keep mosquitoes from biting you. Encephalitis, of course, is inflammation of the brain. If you've been mosquito bitten, the signs like headache, high fever, chills, vomiting, for 4 to 10 days afterward take place. It rapidly progresses into disorientation and convulsions, so it ain't the flu. It's diagnosed through a blood test or spinal fluid sample. People can recover completely within weeks if it is caught soon enough and they have health care. Oops! Your best bet to protect yourself is to use a spray with DEET or lemon eucalyptus. When you go outside, wear long pants and long sleeves and try to keep mosquito habitats down to a minimum. And make sure your screens don't have any holes in them. Maybe catch a praying mantis and tie a little piece of thread to its leg and tie it to your bedpost, and you won't have any mosquitoes in your bedroom. Can we talk about insects for the entire show? Do you have a story about Jerusalem beetles? They're fugly. But seriously, insect-borne diseases are not normally seen in the U.S. and are becoming much more prevalent due to what? Yes, the climate crisis. I'd say that Gaia is seriously pissed at humans. Or maybe the humans have managed to shit in their own nest so long that we're rearranging the evolutionary biology for the next species to come along on the evolutionary trail. You ever pull the wings off a fly? You ever see the fly get even? Darlene says, yeah, 'tis the season for EEE and West Nile virus. Thanks for the warning. It's been slowly moving south to north in Connecticut. Getting inside the house earlier now in the evenings. Gosh. If only there was something we could do about these mosquitoes and them surviving further and further north. Once upon a time in the history of the young nation, and the reason that Congress takes August off, is because Washington, D.C. really was situated on a swamp. And Washington, D.C. was prone to plagues and outbreaks of yellow fever and malaria. The same for Philadelphia. There was something that was called the line, something line. And if you lived below it and you were a brand new European colonist, if you survived your first year, you had a considerable likelihood of continuing to live. But a lot of people didn't. There was a massive outbreak of yellow fever in Philadelphia in the 18th and again in the 19th century. And the best way to not get it in Washington, D.C. was to leave town for a month and a half. How about that? I prefer the lemon eucalyptus over the DEET, I think. I don't know if DEET is better. Yeah, Stephen New York points out, there's a reason where I went to college in D.C., George Washington University. It's called Foggy Bottom. So that's your alma mater, Steve, where the guy got slimed by Brett Stevens. Well, how'd he do? Don't suppose you know Dr. Karpf, do you? Let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd. Oh, Todd. Todd?
Good.
It wasn't me.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me, right?
Hello?
Yeah, you hear me, right?
Are you there?
Do you hear me?
Oh, I hear you now.
Okay, this is just weirder and weirder.
Let me tell you what's really strange. When you first clicked over, unlike in the recent past, since you had the new rig, I could actually hear through the phone. So that, that was my, instead of before it was dead, like you couldn't hear on the phone, you had to kind of have the radio on to hear because of the channel issue. So it did it for like maybe a half a second and it went off.
Yeah, it does, because you may recall a few nights ago, I was trying to keep the ringing of the Skype out of, and so I'm actually bringing this in on another phone on Skype.
Okay.
But you should be able to hear me without me having to, I should be able to mute the phone Skype and you still hear me through the unit.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently not. Let's try this again.
Don't
hang up. We're just going to test real quick, okay? Stand by.
Okay.
Do you hear me? Todd, do you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, obviously you didn't. So.
Right. Right. I didn't want to cut the, okay. So.
All right. That's another thing I've learned. Beautiful. But I do, so you hear me this way, and that's good. I think. Todd? Yeah, for pity's sake.
All right.
Wait a minute.
What the hell? Yeah. I don't. Listen, the phone just started dialing somebody else.
It wasn't me.
I heard a ring, right? It started ringing, and it was dialing another friend of mine.
Let's hang up here. Come back in, would you? Yeah. Do it again, and I'll answer, I'll answer you on the other line. Huh. It's almost. I've got tech questions out to the folks at the manufacturer. Hopefully, I'll get some answers. So let's try this again, Todd. There he is. Did you ever have dreams of teching a broadcast studio live online, Todd?
No. Thank God. That, but listen, this is getting stranger and stranger. I'm telling you, this person at the phone, this phone started calling and my face didn't hit the keypad, which can happen with this type of phone sometimes, but it wasn't even, it could not have been prompted by that. And I don't think she has Skype. She might, but I doubt it. That was just, I don't know. This is getting weird. But see, that's really why I called, as Scott would say. Really, honestly. Because, let me say this. Is Frontier, are they peculiar to West Virginia?
No, they're all over the place. You can have Frontier up in New England. You can have Frontier in some parts of California. Frontier, right. when Verizon got out of the hardwired phone business, and the direct line internet business, they had, well, the way it worked out is they had a bunch of good union workers through the CWA, Communication Workers of America. And so they tried to fuck their union workers by palming off Verizon onto this fly-by-night outfit called Frontier. And so it was sort of seamless, but it just sucks.
Because, was that in the '90s?
Oh, no, that's in the aughts.
What? Okay, late night. Larry, because Larry was in Philly. I remember when he was the union rep. I mean, the union president. Larry, somebody or another. He was based in Philadelphia because he couldn't.
Well, they've still got some union workers on the ground in Frontier, but like. They wrung concessions out of the union so that, like, all their telephone tech support is in India for the most part. They're just horrible.
I mean, I don't want to say it like that because, you know, it's just, I don't want to castigate a whole group of folk.
Well, no, I'm castigating the corporation, not, you know.
Right. But when you said Indian, I went, oh, and I don't want
it. No. They, I mean, it's just a fact. They farmed it out. They farmed the work out to India. So right. every time I call with a question, I have to go through the litany of, you know, have I turned my router off and turned it back on again?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a great job if you're in India. They get paid in American money, man. And, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great if you've got, like, water to drink.
Did you see that?
Because the climate
crisis. They can't lose a drop of water.
Yeah, the climate crisis is kicking India's ass. The monsoon's all screwed up. That Chinese hoax is working them over.
It's a whole lot. Well, and I'm a tangent person, so I'm going to try to stay focused. Okay, so Frontier's not peculiar to West Virginia. The reason I asked you that is because when I had cable, it was a local place, and the MSNBC would never come in properly. It would just drop out. It would be gone for a day, right in the middle of Chris Matthews' program. It would just drop out. Finally, somebody who was about to quit told me, oh, yeah, they're real right-wing. They don't like MSNBC, and they fuck with their shit. I don't know how you can do that, but that's what the person said, and I don't doubt it. And that's why I asked you that. So, we're in treacherous times right now. This could be the end of us. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but this is just too much bullshit going on now. It's just too much.
You're not alone. It feels like we're approaching something dire. I mean, I can't begin. We have a historical record of how people felt, for instance, when the plague was ravaging Europe. But those people were baffled by why it rains, and they thought maybe the plague was caused by Jews.
Well, now we're baffled by why people vote Republican.
Yeah, and in their case, you know, the whole human nature of Western Europe changed in a matter of a couple of years. Prior to the plague, you see these happy medieval illustrations of happy peasants bringing in the sheaves and happy peasants hoisting tankards of ale and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And the art becomes almost immediately filled with skeletons and kings and popes being depicted as rotting corpses. And what I find kind of fascinating about that is that, you know, that's a response to a world gone completely haywire.
Mm-hmm.
And people representing it in art. And now, in the modern era, you have the proliferation of a cultural phenomenon that is fairly unique and specific to Central Mexico. You know, the Day of the Dead masks, the skull masks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it has run all over the world, somewhat mirroring what happened in the mid-14th century, an obsession with death.
The death cult. Yep. Well, I don't want to say cult, but I know what you're talking about. I mean, they burn candles to that effect, and they have to, you know, and that's right.
Yeah, in Mexico, and I don't know what the Spanish is for it, but they have these things called sugar skulls, and they're little skulls, macabre skulls made out of sugar that are, they're candy, and you know, children will sit there and, you know, licking on their sugar skull. What an image.
Well, if you notice, this started in the late 90s, maybe, with the new, what I call newfangled, because I'm old, but like a black on a white type of T-shirt, and with skulls and kind of calligraphy writing, jeans, cowboy boots. You know, it's a real movement.
Well, yeah, it's not just that. Consider the proliferation of the concept of the zombie.
The zombies are taking over.
The walking, the popularity of the Walking Dead, the popularity of the game Left for Dead. The couple of times I was in New Orleans over the last couple of years, every gift shop is festooned with these Mexican style skulls.
It's definitely the end thing. It's the end thing. I mean, it's out there.
But the question is why it's in. And it's a manifestation, I think, of an obsession with death. Because, well, and it begins in Mexico because of the cartels. You know, mm-hmm. one day you're alive, and the next day you've been dragged out on the street and had a bullet put through your head, or you've been disappeared and had your head chopped off and your heart ripped out. And
Great. And
life becomes very uncertain and very fleeting under those circumstances. And then when you consider the proliferation of senseless gun violence in this country,
mm-hmm.
you can see why it takes root here.
Once again, you read my mind. I was going to make that connection. Because in the black community, like if you talk to some of the young guys, you know, if you live in a hood, a neighborhood, a community, not a community, a community, you know, you have whole masses of people now who don't expect to live past 25 anyway. period.
And not without reason.
But not without reason. And they live their life as such. And if you ask them, they say, well, I'm not going to be around anyway. You know, and my God, all these, what is going on? Like, the football game in Kansas, it's just too many shootings now. Hey, I just don't understand it. But whoever, who wrote you in about Goya or Gaia? Because I think there's something to that.
Oh, that was Billable Rick, yeah. The Gaia is very pissed.
Gaia, listen, that makes all the sense in the world. If you believe in karma and physics and just the natural order of things, human beings, we're the scourge of the earth. The earth could be fine without us. We're the problem. We are the problem.
See, I'm sort of anthropocentric or anthropophilic. Mm-hmm. I like humanity. We've done a lot of we are some terribly clever and pleasant when we want to be primates. We're also capable of incredible violence. But that's the dichotomy of our natures.
We hadn't been around that long.
But the dinosaurs didn't paint on cave walls. The dinosaurs didn't create art.
What are we doing with our genius, Kincaid?
We've done a lot. We've made exquisite music, exquisite visual art. We have we perform sublime acts of kindness and compassion. And largely we do that on an individual basis. And maybe that's where the lesson lies.
Well, when Q comes down and asks and holds court, and he's going to say, well, what has he done?
This is not the Q from QAnon. This is the Q from Star Trek.
Correct. Oh, fuck QAnon. I'm not fucking with them people, no. Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's the only reason I got into the new Star Trek, because Q is just so fascinating.
Well, you've seen, you remember the Bruce Willis movie? What was it? The Fifth Element?
Mm-hmm.
You know, real campy, real visual, over the top. And there's not a chance, given the age of that movie. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm ruining it for some millennials. But toward the end, the Supreme Being is trying to figure out if humanity's worth saving.
Right.
And she's absorbed all the knowledge of the planet, because she's the Supreme Being. And all she see, and what you see visually represented on the screen is a rapid fire succession of wars and death and famine and plague and all the rotten things that human beings are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
But then, well, she learns otherwise. The other movie.
And Bruce Willis.
The other movie, the ending that I think of, though, Edward G. Robinson. Edward G. Robinson's final scene on film, and I mean, he died shortly thereafter, was a deathbed scene. You remember what the movie was?
I could not tell you.
Soylent Green.
No. Oh, it was. Oh, hell yeah. Oh, I do.
And so he goes to the euthanasia center. And they prepare to put him down. And in a world that's lost all of its natural beauty, on this surround wide screen, they project images of a mountain meadow and flowers blooming in spring, and a deer browsing through that meadow.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is old philosophical stuff. It's only beautiful because we as humans came up with the idea of beauty. A rose is only beautiful to a human being. Otherwise, it's just a signal to a bee to come and help it have sex.
Well,
so
see,
it can reproduce.
You're talking about perception now.
Sure. It's all, it's all anything
really
is.
That. Now, I don't, you know, now look, man, we're finding more about higher mammals. Now, you know, we're finding more and more about higher mammals, and they like certain things, whatever like is. Like, in other words, we can't say, like, when I started school, you were, the first thing you were not supposed to do was anthropomorphize an animal. However, that's not true anymore. That is absolutely not true. You cannot say you may not ascribe human qualities to an animal anymore, any longer.
Yeah, but it's like
I
what
keep up with my journal.
Yeah, but it's like what I was saying about science, technology, engineering, and math. There's a current fetish for thinking that that is the be all and end all of human knowledge.
But it is STEM.
STEM is not the be all and end all of human endeavor. Science, technology, engineering, and math. It isn't.
Well, that's why you always like to talk about the arts, because part of our brain.
Chimps and crows both use tools.
Right.
Neither of them make art. So STEM, without the A in it, making it steam, STEM without arts is just a stick. The only reason we have science, the only reason we have technology, the only reason we have engineering, the only reason we have mathematics is because of the essential human desire to know more about the world in which we live and to be able to represent it and quantify it. And that, you know, before there was science, before there was technology, before there was engineering, before there was math, there was art. And so art drives it all. You know,
see, I'm seeing a feedback loop, because now we use science and technology to make art.
Yeah, and we also use science, technology, engineering, and math as an argument for why colleges don't need the liberal arts.
Look at fractals. That they, you know, fractals is the wonderful coexistence of math and art. A fractal is a beautiful thing. Fibonacci.
Yeah, but it's only beautiful because we're able to perceive it.
Well, we're back to perception.
It's
then.
Just
see,
it's
we're,
just
we're
it's comp- it's just an isolated event. Otherwise, human beings bring all of that. So I'm not willing to say that we're some sort of scourge on the planet. I am willing to say that because we don't have the magnificent vision of a cat or their snapping jaws or their claws or any of the other things with which creatures in the natural world were gifted. You know, we can't shoot silk out our asses like a spider.
Okay. All right.
What we have is an evolved consciousness. And of course, one of the great debates is, when did the light go on? When did Og fall out of the tree and have that moment?
Space Odyssey.
And have that moment. You know, the theory that's presented in 2001 is kind of a grim theory, that we became conscious when we started killing each other, dancing around that goddamned obelisk with that fucking bloody bone.
That was it. Cain and Abel. But, all right, so all right, I'm feeling a little depressed today. And I'd like for you to bookmark in your mind this conversation, because it's very prescient. I think this conversation is a powerful conversation, because we had a capacity to make things better, and we know how to make things better, but we refuse to, some of us. And we had the capacity to just fuck shit up quickly. See, we're on the precipice now, and this is why I'm feeling a little bit down today. These fascists all worldwide are taking over. They've infiltrated. People have been dumbed down or whatever. I don't want to say, yeah, I do want to say dumbed down, but they see things differently than we see things. You know, they don't believe in the community. They just want what they want, and they want it now. And this is posing a real problem. Now, in our country, now the fix is in. The Federal Elections Commission. Now, this dude, this mentally ill fascist, this mentally ill puppet fascist, the Trump-Putin presidency, has gotten everything in order to just fuck. We're done. We are so close to done now. We are so close. This I mean, with no one guarding the elections, and the attorney general was asked in his job interview in Congress, his hearing, well, would you take foreign influence? He had to pause.
Sure, and Trump said,
in a minute, I'd take it in a minute. Why wouldn't you?
Sure. We've got about a third of the country that really doesn't believe in the American experiment anymore. But we cannot necessarily transpose that onto the rest of the world. And by the way, note coming in from Lady B. Why would we be curious about reaching the stars if we hadn't gazed up in wonder first? I can be negative sometimes, Lady B says, but I'm not a misanthrope. No good will come of wiping humans off the earth. How the hell would earth have meaning? And it won't until another species arrives and develops a level of consciousness similar to ours, and that, of course, is the six-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches I talk about from time to time, who will worship us as gods, because we made the earth a big enough cesspit for them to survive and thrive and evolve to be, you know, six-foot-tall sentient cockroaches.
Look, I believe in the beetle family. There's some tough SOBs. That's why I want an exoskeleton.
Zed, we have a bug. Darlene in Connecticut says, if a tree falls in the forest, damn, Todd mentioned fractals. What other program did that today? Great conversation. Yeah, because, well, we do things here that a lot of other programs don't. Darlene also pushes back a little bit on the idea of the celebration of death and the Day of the Dead, Spanish Dia de los Muertos. God, I can't say that. You know, when I was in the bush, there were these tsetse flies, the big as eagles, and they would carry away these little brown babies clutched in their beaks. Sadly, they were protected against pilferage by the Guacamole Act of 1917. The natives had a word for them. Jose Grecos Los Muertos. Flamenco Dances of Death. And I took pictures. I would have won a Pulitzer. But I left the roll of film in a jacket that I had martinized. I'm sorry.
What? You want to carry film around?
Jesus, I love that movie. But anyway, the in-laws.
Yeah.
Dia de los Muertos, a rather lovely, poignant three-day holiday about Latin Americans commemorating their departed ancestors, family members, and friends. It really is a celebration, and community-wide parties and parades ensue. A happy time, not macabre like Catholicism. They remember those who have gone before, and they set up shrines to those departed loved ones. It's just Halloween on steroids. It's pretty cool, actually. Shout out to Todd. And, yeah, all of that is true. And Flavio provided a little bit more background that it was imported to the New World. The sugar skulls are called Alfenike, molded from sugar paste. They started out in Italy. And they became popular in Spain. Eventually, they were brought to Mexico with Catholicism. And then they were folded into the Day of the Dead celebrations, which goes even further back. Calendrically, the calendar which the indigenous people of the Valley of Mexico used when Cortez arrived was orders of magnitude more accurate than our own.
Mm-hmm.
And but in order to keep the calendar in order, they were called dead days. And when those things rolled around, you didn't go out. You had everything that you needed. You didn't cook.
You hunkered down in the house.
You hunkered down and tried to make sure that the gods didn't notice you, because if the gods did, they might decide to destroy humanity again. Because in their cosmology, the gods had destroyed humanity several times. And there's probably some, like, archetypal genetic memory in that, because those those cultures in that region had risen and fallen and risen and fallen in an almost waveform pattern over the course of about 10,000 years. So, the Roman Catholicism death cult, and it is, brought the sugar skulls with them. But there was, if ever there were two cultures that were so hung up that it was almost like destiny that they would meet, it was the culture of Central Mexico in the 15th century, and the religiously insane Spanish and Portuguese culture of the same period.
The profiteers.
And they clashed. And among other things, the Roman, you know, like I said, the things that were lost, the Roman Catholic priests ordered the burning of huge mounds of fawn skin books.
Mm-hmm.
They made books, and they used their pictographic writing, and color meant things, and shapes meant things, and just as in Egyptian hieroglyphics, sometimes a pictogram meant a sound, and sometimes it meant the thing the picture was representing.
Okay, I'm not feeling as down now, maybe, because I see where this is going with our, I mean, we lead the world, and I see where this is going with our country. So we can just forget it for the next couple, I don't know, maybe 150 years or so.
I don't think so. I mean, nothing's going to be, we're not going back to whatever it was we used to think normal was. But that's been a process a long time coming, Todd. Normal went to its grave with people like Newt Gingrich. Again, I remember being in Atlanta in the late 80s. And seeing stories about the vicious shit that he would pump into the body politic day in and day out as a meaningless backbencher congressman.
Wait a minute. We're on the same page.
He made
acid watching that. He knew how to work C-SPAN. He said, oh, hell, we have cameras? He would stand up there in the well. No one would be in there, but he would stand up in there and just filibuster. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Sure. And so eventually, and the idea of collegiality, you know, where Republicans and Democrats would rail against each other on the floor, and then the gavel would come down, and then it turned out they were best buddies, you know, like a wrestling tour, and they'd go to some Tony restaurant in D.C. and get sloshed out of their minds. And get up, and it was the sheepdog and the coyote from the Warner Brothers cartoons. Good night,
except
Sam.
Except that Newt really good night, is Ralph. A lizard.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he really was a lizard. I mean, my God. He
put paid to all of that. It ended.
All right.
And at the same time, Newt is propelled by the rise of right-wing hate radio, particularly Rush Limbaugh.
Who I listened to today, I listened to a lot of right-wing radio today. And do you understand that they are on this mission? As far as they're concerned, there is no connection between this administration and Russia. There's nothing there. It's falling apart every day. It's a big hoax, and that's why they're calling Trump a racist, because they have nothing left. That's their tome. That's going to be their talking point. So we need to get ready for this. Because I believe in listening to everything and reading everything I can and researching as much as I can that I have time for. So that's where they're coming from now, which I find just incredulous. But that's what they're doing,
and it'll work so far. But there are cracks appearing in the armor. And again, we live in a bubble, so we care about things like a burning Amazon. Most of America.
Well, that's what I wanted to
most
say.
Of America does.
Wait a minute. What? See, this is, I mean, my God, did they go to school? Do they understand do they understand the importance? I mean, my God, man, ever since I've been in school, I mean, in the 80s, it was like, come on. The Amazon is so important. It's like, thank God for the Amazon. You know, don't buy any mahogany. Don't buy any teak because, you know, these trees, what they have to do to get these trees, don't do it. And now what this asshole is doing, he is pushing this shit forward like by 200 years maybe. And it's what he ran on. He told the farmers, oh, yeah, that's what I want. You know, forget those people. They don't wear clothes. Fuck them. But back to Gaia. See, this is why, like, you know, I'm not going to get into my religion because it doesn't matter. Because I don't go to church, but, you know, I pray. But it doesn't mean you can't believe in just simple physics, right? And I think Kevin Costner was onto something with Waterworld. People laughed at him. They laughed at him about that movie.
Well, they laughed at him because it was such a horrible, egotistical expenditure of money for something that really didn't do so great at the box office. That's all that matters in Hollywood. But he was, you know, he was presenting an alternative dystopia to the dystopia of Mad Max, where climate change has caused the sea level to rise to the point that we're practically a water world, and there's very little in the way of dry land. If you want the darkest vision I've ever seen presented, and I'm a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan. I think
I know we are.
He's a genius and he's beloved, but I don't think he's even yet fully appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a novel called Galapagos, and it's creepy to read it now. Because a bunch of the stuff that he predicted, in particular a little box that you could hold in your hand that would translate every language on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Smartphone.
Yeah. It's all there now. But it is, at least the way I read it, a dark and nihilistic vision of the future of what the human species is. I won't ruin it for anybody. I've already ruined two movies this evening, at least for the millennials.
Millennials, what do they know? So
now, don't do that.
What?
Don't say millennials. What do they know? Don't do that.
No, I'm getting crotchety, man. It's just really. I don't know what's going to become of us. It's going to be different.
Well, that's where I was trying to go a few minutes ago, and that is to say, no, whatever happens in November of 2020, when we get to January 2021, if things go right, the way we want them to, it's still not going to be the same as what went before January the 20th, 2017. Charlie Pierce had an article talking about the election of Warren Gamaliel Harding. And he campaigned on something called a return to normalcy.
Isn't he the one who just sat on the front porch of the White House and didn't do shit? He didn't talk. He didn't do shit.
No, that was I think you're talking about Silent Cal Coolidge. That was his vice president. Warren G. Harding did plenty up until.
I think it was Harding. Harding was laissez-faire. He just let business do what the hell he wanted to do.
No, he did a lot of things. Up until Bill Clinton came along, he was the poster child for being a philandering hound dog of a human being.
Oh, okay. Well, no, that wasn't
He's the one whose conduct gave us the quip, "Ma, ma, where's my pa?" Because unlike Clinton, he actually fathered a child out of wedlock, and the baby was born and stuff. I mean,
yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry for doubting you.
But he campaigned on this concept of, you know, this is the post-World War One America. Wilson was laying there practically in a coma. The government was utterly dysfunctional because Edith Wilson wouldn't let anybody near him because she didn't want to stop being the first lady.
First president.
And the first woman president for all intents and purposes. And so the country was in, well, it felt in many ways, if you read the history, it felt similar to where we are now. And so Harding campaigned on a return to normalcy.
Well, who was the one who didn't speak?
That was Silent Cal, his vice president. Because Harding dies.
Harding, he went to a dinner party, and this woman made a bet. Said, "Someone bet me that you wouldn't say four words," and he said, "You lose."
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah, I think it was three words, but he said, "You lose." He was Harding's vice president,
okay.
And all of those Republicans just let business run wild, and that's how we got the Great Depression. But the key here is the idea that we could return to normal. Now, Pierce, in his piece, suggests that that's basically the campaign, the motivating force behind the campaign of Joe Biden, is that everything's going to be normal again if you just elect me president.
Yeah.
But I think that's falsehood. I think that's a fairy tale. That's a myth. Because there's been too much damage done. The damage that was done to American governance by our participation in World War One, it can now, looking back, be measured qualitatively and quantitatively, but it was not on the order of magnitude of the damage that will have been done by January 20th, 2021. This is a genie that we cannot put back in the box. Okay?
This is different. This is totally different. This is absolutely, look, this is different. This is like three-dimensional chess different. Trump is a puppet.
Well, even if he's not, let's say that he's a fully autonomous with complete working executive functions, and he's normal.
Executive functions and Trump in the same breath.
Yeah, I know. But even if we assume that, the vandalism that has been done to the things that we thought were the norms of our functioning government are too great to be fixed in 1 4-year term.
Oh, hell yeah.
Look, in the age of Trump, I said this before Trump became president, or was elected or not elected, but I still stand by it. the greatest mistake we have made politically in the last 100 years is constitutionally term limiting the president of the United States. Because in a time where you need the stabilizing hand of a capable executive, we arbitrarily said, nope, don't care how good you are. We're just gonna limit you to 2 terms, and fuck you. Okay. Try to imagine, if you can. We know that Obama got us through, and of course we can have arguments about whether, you know, bailing out Wall Street, yada yada yada. We got through the Great Recession. He actually created more jobs. There were more jobs created. He didn't create them. There were more jobs created under his last 20 months in office than have been created in the first 20 months of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take Obama and give him a third term and you give him this house to work with, and then he gets a Senate he can work with, there's a possibility you get a golden age, and yeah, you know what? You might get a 4th term of Obama, too. Maybe a 5th.
Okay, I'm feeling better. I'm feeling a little bit better.
Well, I mean...
Only because... let me say this, because you've been saying dream big. Like, we really have to get the Senate back. We have to maintain this House and really get the Senate. And then we can even just try to get shit back together. But the courts! I'm sorry, so please go ahead.
Well, there's a solution there, too. But the thing is, we have completely screwed the pooch by making sure that when we have a time of grave peril, we will not be allowed to keep a competent leader in office. The entire system of the chief executive in Article 2 of the Constitution is that a bad one won't be allowed to stay in office. The people will chuck his ass out. But what we get now is that every president dreams of having 8 years in office and spends the first 4 years working on getting the second 4 years. Remember, FDR didn't deal with that.
No, he just went...
FDR was able to go to work, keep at it, keep running, He knew that his plan was going to take more than 8 years, and he planned on working it until he got the situation fixed.
See, we went into it like a farmer. He planted the seeds, and he grew the crop, and then we reaped the benefit.
We can't do that now because we have a constitutional amendment that was rammed through by a bunch of pissed-off, butt-hurt Republicans who didn't like the fact that FDR had whipped their ass every time they turned around and kept them in the wilderness. And they only regained something resembling an ascendancy after he was dead.
Well, all right, here's the workaround to that, and it's called grooming. And if Biden has the cognitive ability and stamina to make it through the end of this process, which I don't know.
He's already had his Hello Cleveland moment. Standing in New Hampshire talking about how much he loved being in Vermont. I mean, I guess I'm not supposed to talk about that, but it's real hard not to.
No, you have to. We're real people, man. Come on. Otherwise, you're compromising your credibility if you don't. This is what is good about your show. Look at all the information that has been spouted. I mean, all this information that you brought forth. In an hour and a half or, however long tonight. People's commented on it. I mean, come on. This is a special type of program.
I love the fact that happens. But if we're going to address this idea of what comes next, and I think we have to have something resembling hope and a will, and that hope has to drive action. Hope is meaningless by itself. You know, you can shit in one hand and hope in the other and see which one fills up first. But we've got to have some idea of what's coming next. And we got to have a list. And I don't know, maybe there's somebody in Washington keeping a list of shit that has to be fixed. But somewhere down the road, we have got to fix this notion, the term limit on a good president was the most anti-democratic thing this country has ever done. It was a matter of saying to the American people, you can't be trusted to elect a president. Because even if you love the president, and even if the president's doing a great job, we're going to force you to throw him out. I mean, honestly, think about it. No, I'm sure that the Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol has lots of bad things to say about Barack Obama. Absolutely, we'll take it as read. But goddamn, wouldn't I take a third term of Barack Obama over living through the madness of having to get up every day and read about the president wanting to fucking nuke a hurricane?
No, the C-SPAN crowd would differ with you. The C-SPAN crowd would say that this is the best president that America's ever had.
Yeah, and you know what? They pick their teeth with their fucking toenail clippings. We've got to stop. I mean, we talk about them here. You've got to be aware of them. But by the same token, we've got to stop pretending that they have anything to offer the conversation. That's why right-wingers aren't allowed on this program. They have nothing to offer in the way of solving a problem.
Okay. I'm trying to deal with realities now. And this is the reality. Our educational system has been dumbed down since the mid-70s. That's when they started taking art out. And it just went downhill from then. I mean, the elementary school I went to is still functioning. And it is in a good neighborhood. And it was built in 1880-something. And I remember when I went to school, they started cutting the water off because of lead. So we got a whole lot of people who are drinking a whole lot of leaded water. This is the hidden fuck up shit that's going on in our country right now. It's one of the reasons people are so damn crazy. And this is what I don't understand. This is a whole other tangent. But see, that would put people to work. That's the new WPA project. Fix our water systems. It's not just Newark. It's not just Flint. But that's a whole other thing. But it's something to think about. But I hear what you're saying. And now, but this is what I'm concerned about, though. Because of the way we operate now as human beings, and I only say this because I have a number of young people in my family that I'm close to, you know, young children, kids, teenagers, different levels, who've grown up now in the tech age. And because of the devices we have, they expect things quick. Okay, you ask, they want to know shit now. Like, why are you taking so long? Answer the question. All right, fine, I'll look it up. Boom. You know, they look it up. They don't have patience. Their attention span is shorter. Somebody's fucking up. They want to get rid of them. Out you go. They're not as pragmatic in general. Now, at the same time, our body's politic, man, come on, we're a little anemic. And this is what I say. Look at our system. Man, I've had an ongoing conversation with a very intelligent person about the squad. All right? And I think this is prescient. All right, the squad. Now, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, you have to buy your committee ship. I mean, it's attribution points combined with how much money are you bringing to the DNC. In other words, how much money did you raise? You buy that. You buy that chairmanship. You buy to be the head of a committee. You buy that. That is pay for play. So that being said, Ilhan Omar and Tlaib, okay, they're just like Steve King. They represent their districts. Most thinking people think it's disgusting that Steve King is even in the House of Representatives, being the racist idiot that he is. But guess what? Those people keep voting him in. And this is America. If you have a concentration of Klans people and they want the Klansmen in, look at how Indiana used to be. That's the way it works. It's America.
Okay. Now, that's fine. And I think, you know what? I used to be like, oh, don't they protect those women? I don't care now. If they're dumb enough to act up like they're doing, the leadership has told them, and I've been analyzing Nancy Pelosi's language. Remember she said there's just four votes. That was her telling, that was Nancy Pelosi telling those ladies, you will never get a chairmanship. You will never be the head of a committee.
I don't necessarily agree.
But may I finish my, let me finish my argument.
Sure.
Let me finish my argument. Now, she's told them to settle down. This is your first year. Settle down. Shut up. You're causing too much trouble. You know, you're just making too much trouble. But you got to look at who they represent in their districts. Now, you like history. I like history. We both know, number one, that the largest Somali population in the country is in Minnesota. And that was Kiesel District is where Omar is. Okay? Ilhan Omar. Tlaib, that district has historically been a lot of Lebanese people and also people from the Middle East. And what do they have in common? They know what goes on in Israel. They know it's an apartheid system. That's why the BDS, boycott, divest, and BDS, right. Boycott, divest, and what's this for?
Sanction.
Sanction. That's the way to do it. I mean, my guy, what other country do you know of that just flouts what the UN says? And everybody goes, well. And it's complicated. And so we have to have this conversation about the difference between Judaism, being a Jew, and Zionism. They're different things.
Oh, God, that makes my eyeballs feel like they're bleeding just thinking about it.
Now, I mean, I'm just putting some facts on the table. These are just facts. It's not my opinion. That's just how shit is. Because why can Steve King be a guy? He's all but a Klansman. And then he's like, oh, yeah, inset. He all but said, yeah, I'm a product of some inset. You know, what of it? Or somebody in my family. That's what he was saying the other day. And rape. Oh, you're rape baby. That's no problem. You know, my cousin raped his daughter, and then, you know, that's my little cousin now. Yeah. What, you want me to kill my family? You know, come on. See, these are the things we have to discuss.
Well, going back to the Brett Stevens story for just a minute.
Okay.
One of the things that, because like I said, the reason Brett shut down his Twitter account was because he's got lots of sleazy, filthy shit in it. And he was getting called bad. People were bringing receipts with, you know, thick as a phone book with rubber bands around them. And when he pulled his little stunt, Mehdi Hassan, a journalist, said Palestinians should write en masse to Brett Stevens and ask them to visit their homes in the ask him to visit their homes in the occupied territories and tell them to their faces that they are, and this is a quote from Brett Stevens, seized by bloodlust.
Damn. That's a loaded term, isn't it?
Sure. Well, I mean, that, you know, every Palestinian is just a homicidal maniac in waiting. But I would rather not talk about Israel.
Right.
Because Israel is not the greatest threat the United States faces or anything associated with it right now. The greatest threat the United States faces is Donald J. Goddamn Trump.
Right. But right.
And
it
we
is,
and we
is,
have to
is.
And you know, Israel Zionism is not going to drive an election. It might pull a few votes in this district or that district, but it's not going to turn an election. What's going to turn the election is, sadly, because we live in our little try to pay attention to everything bubble, while the vast majority of America lives in a bubble that, for a variety of reasons, they're more interested in paying attention to the Video Music Awards or what's
she has time to watch that shit.
Or what's coming up next on, or who's going to get caught in bed with who on, you know, we're amused to death. But the cracks are appearing because, among other things, the agriculture secretary, a Georgia fella by the name of Perdue, the Trump regime is desperately casting about the country looking for somewhere that they think that they might steal a blue state in 2020. And they've decided that one of those places is Minnesota. So Agriculture Secretary Perdue got sent to Minnesota to talk to some farmers.
Sonny Perdue?
I'm not sure if it's Sonny or, but yeah, there, I think there's a couple of Perdue boys.
Okay. I'm sorry. Please.
That's all right. But he shows up, and by way of breaking the ice, you know, when you're going to address a group, you always want to have a little joke to break the ice and get things loosened up. So he looks at this group of farmers, and, you know, farmers were reliably maggot as maggot can be back during the 2016 campaign. Ooh, they had their maggot hats on and their maggot stickers and their maggot shirts, and their farmer wives wore their T-shirts that said, "Trump can grab me by the pussy." And so Sonny Perdue lightens up the moment a little bit because these are a bunch of farmers that are getting the daylights fucked out of them by his boss. And he says, "Hey, what do you call a bunch of..." And of course, he's got his cornpone accent, and that's not going to play real well up there where they talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Hey, what do you call a bunch of farmers standing in a basement?" And those Minnesota farmers just sort of looked at him like a cow looking at a new gate. And he said, "A wine cellar. Ho, 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 ho." You know, farmers all the time whining. "Ho, ho, ho." I don't care who you are. That's funny. And they booed his ass.
That's not even funny, though, is it? I don't know. I'm missing a joke. I don't know. I'm not a farmer, so maybe I don't get the context.
I think the larger context is that farmers are never happy about if it's warm and sunny. Well, goddamn it, we ain't had no rain. If it's raining, it's goddamn, we need the sun to come out and dry things. If it's warm, oh, my plants are going, my crops going to wither and die on the vine. If it's cold, all the frost is going to, because
the white farmers get paid anyway, no matter what happens.
Because farming is a precarious calling.
They always get paid.
Farming's
come
a
on.
No, they don't.
If you're a family farmer, you don't. But if you work for ConAgra, you do. You get subsidies. I got my soybean crop out. I want my fucking check.
Right, but the point here is, those reliable maggots booed the agriculture secretary till a fly wouldn't light on him, because they may have really been turned on by Trump's language about all them goddamn Mexicans and, you know, all them goddamn black people. But the chickens came home to roost and shit all over their bank accounts.
What, well, the tariffs are hurting them. They're hurting everybody.
Right, they're being crucified on a cross of tariffs. And even FDR's New Deal subsidy money is not enough to make up what they're losing.
Damn.
So
I want to believe, Bob. I want to believe that it's just, I understand what you're saying. That is like the backbone of his base. I want to believe, but I see.
I didn't know there was such a thing as a farmers union. But apparently there is, and there's a few people that are members of it.
I read that, too. Yep, I read that.
And the president of the Farmers Union, the president of the Farmers Union unloaded on Nitwit Nero with both barrels. And that gives the Trump regime the dribbling turtle squirts. Because if he loses the rednecks with the dirt under their fingernails, he's fucked. Because they don't, you know, they don't care about foreign policy. They just want to plant their soybeans, raise their soybeans, harvest their soybeans, sell their soybeans, and get ready to plant more soybeans.
Right. Now, those of us who've been paying attention, you know, to these crop and the crop futures and things like that, apparently when, you know, these tariffs hit, you know, China starts looking for different markets. And then, you know, you sign contracts. So they might not be the selling thing to these other folks that they've been selling to for a couple of years. If you understand what I'm saying, because it's not just like, hey, it's not like you go to the farmer's market. They sign contracts. I will buy X amount of tons of, you know, widgets, how many widgets, soybeans from you. I mean, if I'm wrong here, please correct me.
No, I mean, you've got some agreement coming in from Freight Train Frank out in Iowa. Frank's
That's
a member.
That's a hell of a name. Well, I like that.
Frank's a member of the Iowa Blues Hall of Fame.
No shit.
Yeah, I gotta check out some of Frank's music. But I guess this is kind of joke farmers tell on each other. Frank said, "How does a farmer double his income? Gets another mailbox."
Yeah.
And see that's like hillbilly jokes. Yeah, you know, we'll tell them on each other. We'll tell them on ourselves, but we don't want some asshole coming from Washington and telling them to us down at the Grange Hall. Or,
right.
You know,
everybody our business.
Down to the Legion Hall. I mean,
need farmers.
I can sit here and I can say, hey, how come you can't take a group picture of West Virginians? Well, because every time the photographer says cheese, we form a single line. But we don't want some asshole from D.C. coming and telling that to us. Hey, why can't you take a group picture of you people?
Oh, you people.
Doesn't play as well now, does it?
No.
And I know the same thing happens in other communities. People in the gay community tell gay jokes to each other. People in the black community tell black jokes to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's more. That's self-deprecating.
Like talking about your family. Like you can talk about your family, but don't. You can't. Other people, they can't. What? Who are you? You can't come over here talking about my.
Don't talk about mama. You know, I can say my mother couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. You can't. So, right. And by the way, you mentioned Burr a few minutes ago. And I got a note from Darlene. You might want to get the hockey puck for this.
Oh, God.
I did not see this today. I feel like I want to run out in the yard and tear at my clothing and eat dirt and run rabbits. Headline, Attorney General books Trump Hotel for $30,000 holiday party.
How can he do that?
Well, because it is easier to ask forgiveness than permission. Let me get my newsy voice on. Attorney General William P. Barr is planning a holiday treat for his boss. Last month, Barr booked President Trump's D.C. hotel for a 200-person holiday party in December that is likely to deliver Trump's business more than $30,000 in revenue. Barr signed a contract, a copy of which was obtained by the Washington Post, for a family holiday party in the hotel's presidential ballroom December 8th. The party will feature a buffet and a four-hour open bar for about 200 people.
Damn, Bob. Number one, The Voice. That was beautiful. You should do a whole program like that. Ugh.
May I simply suggest impeach the motherfucker?
I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad. I want to ask you this. I said ask. No, seriously. What is wrong with Nancy Pelosi? That is low-hanging fruit. Bob Barr is a silly-ass lying motherfucker. And he has a terrible track record. I don't care what the for-profit media said. I'm old enough to know what he did. And what he did in recent history, like in the past year or two. You know? Why? Why can't they just move forward with that? Because he's a problem.
There's not enough time left in the program to explain. I know that sounds like a cop-out, and it kind of is, but there isn't. You know, John Mitchell got taken down in Watergate, and he was as slimy and crooked. When he died, they had to auger him into the dirt because he was too crooked to bury. But this ain't then, and the system is broken enough that there's no way to really do anything about him. And I don't even know if he's impeachable. Probably, but, you know, Mitchell didn't get taken down by impeachment. He was taken down by indictment because there was a special prosecutor with the power to indict his ass. But, you know, Mueller would never have done anything like that because Mrs. Barr and Mrs. Mueller go to church together.
We heard about that
during Barr's confirmation hearing. Hey, Todd, just a few minutes left in the program. Scott's been calling. I'm going to try to get him in here. You have yourself a good evening, man.
Bye. Take care.
All right, later. Bye now. It's our buddy Todd. And are you there, Scott? Does this thing work? Is this thing on? It will be in a moment. Are you there, Scott?
Hey, Bob, are you there?
I'm here, and you're there.
Bonnie Prince Robert. I've been out of the loop for a couple of days, but I'm back and late getting in. I don't know what the hell you might have talked about all day yesterday or up till now today. And I've got to reconfigure my list of contact numbers for the show because for some reason the stress line goes right to voicemail whenever I call it.
Well, it didn't this time.
But anyway, that's all right. Well, I'm on the toll free now, which yeah, I never is, call. That, I didn't even look it up.
That is the stress line.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll mark that on my call list. Pardon me, and that way I'll have it. There's nothing really earth shattering to note except for one particular thing that is something that I've been waiting for some months now. And word came out the other day that the long-awaited, long-rumored Breaking Bad movie, which picks up where the series Breaking Bad left off, will premiere on Netflix on October 11th.
Really?
It's a feature-length, yes, a feature-length film, and details are very, very hard to come by.
Well, I can't watch it because I still haven't finished watching the series.
Well, you have between now and October 10th to catch up on all five seasons of Breaking Bad, and I really wish, I hope that you're able to do it, Bob, simply because it's such a fine program, well-crafted with love and intelligence and talent.
Well, the thing is, for reasons that don't bear going into, I watched for the most part, I watch things that Agnes and I watch together.
Yeah.
And she hates, with the heat of a billion suns, that show.
Oh, no. Why?
Like I said, for reasons that don't bear going into.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad, because I know that from what you've said, from what you have watched of it, you said you're having trouble getting into it.
Oh, no. I didn't have any. I got up into season three and just ran out of gas.
Okay.
I was enjoying it. No spoilers, please. I will eventually finish watching it.
Well, I hope you can do it in time to catch the Better Call. I mean, what do you call it? It's called El Camino: A Breaking Bad Movie. Is the actual title of it. And if it's even a fraction as good as the series was, I think no one will be disappointed. Without spoilers, not to get into that, but Breaking Bad is one of the few long-running television series that had a finale that seemed to satisfy everyone. There were very few complaints, and you don't hear that very often in terms of TV shows. Everybody moaned about how The Sopranos ended, but the only other film or TV show that I can think of that the critics and the viewing audience were both happy with how they ended was the Bob Newhart show, the series where he's the innkeeper, okay? I think that's it. Yeah, where he's the innkeeper up in Vermont somewhere, and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Those are really the only two series that there was universal acclaim during the run of the show and the finale. So, but anyway, getting to what you and Todd were talking about, what I did catch of it, and I'm sorry I'm late to the proceedings tonight, but I was somewhat flabbergasted by this three-way 20% tie in a recent poll. I think it was the Monmouth poll.
Monmouth, and I heard mention of it this morning on my Filthy Morning Habit, and the Morning Zoo crew there were twisting themselves into pretzels, trying to describe it as, and this was their word, an outlier. Well, that can't possibly be true. Everybody wants Joe Biden.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well,
I'm not agreeing, but it does. Those numbers are substantially different than other polls of a similar nature. But then again, there's that poll out in Iowa that showed Elizabeth Warren kind of convincingly out front. But all the polls do agree on one thing. John Delaney needs to quit. He needs to quit. Because see what John Delaney was a stalking horse for Biden before Biden entered the race.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to take him seriously. I mean, I have taken to calling him, pardon me, the bald-headed stooge. I mean, and this is nothing against stooges or bald-headed people. It's just like he's taking up valuable space and oxygen and time. It's like, what is he bringing to the party that moves us forward in any decent way to shift about us out of where we are and where we've been for some years in this country into a better way of handling things? And to me, I mean, from everything I've heard from the guy, it's just more of the same. It's the same old What was that Democratic leadership?
The DLC.
What was that?
The DLC.
Yeah, the group that Clinton,
The Democratic Leadership Council.
Yeah, in 1992, he got their endorsement or their, you know, they gave him the certified seal of approvability, you know. And he was really, come right down to it, you look at the Communications Act of 1996, you look at the so-called welfare reform, you look at any number of decisions that Clinton made in his 8 years in office, and it's like there's hardly a difference between traditional Republican, you know, moderate Republican, the way Republicans used to be, and I mean, it's just not traditional Democratic, you know, solid FDR-like reform and improvement policies. I mean, yeah, I mean, he was a Democrat. Good for him. The more I look back at that era, and they tried to paint him as some kind of firebrand, you know, liberal radical, you know, and they're trying to do the same thing with Obama.
Yeah, that's because they've got a jukebox with one goddamn record in it.
Well, yeah, they keep it. Or
is the biggest liberal since Trotsky.
And just to kind of close on this, because I know we're right at the end point of the show, Mark Twain supposedly wrote, if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it. Are we at that point? I mean, is there any truth to that, Bob?
Well, I think, and I've seen it variously attributed to Stalin and Emma, I've heard that quote attributed to Emma Goldman.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's yeah. And wasn't she like a contemporary of Twain, or is this years? Or?
No, she was a hardcore communist of the early 20th century.
Okay, so Twain was gone by then.
She was a contemporary.
Well, maybe that's she got it.
She was a contemporary of Jack Reed. She's brilliant. Yeah. She's brilliant. She's brilliantly played in Reds by
Maureen Stapleton.
Yes.
I was just going to say Reds. If you don't know who Jack Reed is.
But along the same lines, there's another quote that's I think attributed to Stalin. I don't care who votes. I care who counts the votes.
Well, yeah, there is that. There is that. Something that people might consider doing on our side, and I did this years ago when I lived in Kansas City. I did it for a couple of elections. Become a poll worker. They pay you a little stipend, and basically they have two Republican poll workers and two Democratic poll workers, and you're there all day, and you're basically checking people in who have come to your precinct to vote. And it is really a satisfying task. You know, it's like a little payback to our system of government, where you're right there facilitating, if that's the word, you know, supporting people in their performance of their civic duty. And I know that there have been elections and polling places in this country in recent years where people are turned away for no good reason. And I know that the poll workers, at least in Missouri, were not allowed to get all partisan, but they were able to call bullshit if they thought that some sort of, you know, scam was going on. Skullduggery is even a better word. So there's that. But anyway, I'll try to get in later in the week. Because the last couple of days, the heat here is just taking it right out of me. So I've been on my summer sleep schedule, you know, sleeping during the heat of the day and getting up a little later when it begins to cool down.
Kind of like when Lawrence of Arabia crosses the anvil of the sun.
Well, I never saw the film, but I know.
Wait, hold on. Well, oh, no, quit it. We got a new one to work on then.
Oh, God. Here we go.
You've never seen Lawrence of Arabia?
You know, I may have seen it on TCM some years ago, but I nothing about it stuck with me other than the beauty, the sheer beauty of the scenery, of, you know, the majesty of the desert. I'm not near a desert, really, other than the California desert. It's a couple of hours from here. What I do, my beat the heat tip, is to go down to Ralph's and crawl up into the frozen tea cabinet, the frozen food cabinet, until the manager chases me out. There's the one Ralph's downtown.
It blows my mind that there are still places in California, and I know there are, that don't have air conditioning. It's like when the brutal heat wave broiled over Western Europe earlier this summer. It kills people.
Yeah.
It kills people because they don't have air conditioning. It's like the old joke about the American who went to Europe and asked for a glass of iced tea, and they said, "Well, we'd give it to you, but the guy who had the recipe died." You know, for the ice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I was in England, I visited a couple of pubs. This is, you know, 40 years ago almost. At the time, I drank rum and coke. And when I asked the guy to put ice in, he served the drink, and it was just coke with a little rum in it, almost up to the brim. And there was no ice. Apparently, they don't traditionally do ice as a rule, whether it's hot
and
or not.
The beer is served at what is referred to as cellar temperature, or was.
Oh, God. I am not a beer drinker, but I tried some of that dark, pint of...
Yeah. For anyone who's curious, cellar temperature is roughly 54 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that's just too warm for any liquid refreshment in my book.
Jimmy Buffett once declared, "Warm beer and bread, they said, can wake the dead." So, yeah.
Well, damn near killed me, Bob. So maybe, I don't know. But anyway, that's my brief foray into the horn program today.
All right. Well, Scott, we will talk at greater length later in the week. And that one stress line number, the direct dial number is kind of kaput, but you can always use the, when I say the stress line, I mean the toll free line.
Okay. Well, I'll save that on my phone and delete the other one. And then, you know, do that in case the, Skype line is otherwise engaged.
You should know Brother Deacon Asa is trying to negotiate a compromise here. He says, "How about Scott watches Lawrence of Arabia when you finish watching Breaking Bad?" Well, Lawrence of Arabia is long, but it's not three more seasons of Breaking Bad long.
No, that's what is that? What did that movie clock in at? About 3.5 hours or something? The original?
Oh yeah, I mean,
David Lean director stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it is. But, it's magnificent.
Yeah, another one.
He said he likes
another
your lemonade.
One like that. Another one like that, Bob, is Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, I
which
can't.
Is a lovely
Sorry.
Film.
Can't. Tried. Can't.
Really?
Yeah, just can't.
I mean, just to look at the beauty of Omar Sharif and Julie Christie is enough for me, man. And I'm, you know, I don't normally get into that cosmetic stuff, but just, I don't know. Well, it could be just a matter of, you know, it doesn't float everybody's boat. I guess that's what it is.
Just really didn't care about the subject matter, I guess. I tried.
What about another long movie, which is in my top five, and I know you like this one. It's a mad
Oh,
world.
Sure. Yeah. Probably should.
Oh, yeah.
More of it probably should have wound up on the cutting room floor, but it's brilliant for what it is.
Well, some of it did. When it originally premiered, it clocked at like 3 hours and 20 minutes or more.
I recommend this for anybody who has seen the film and loves it as much as I do. Check out the Criterion Blu-ray edition of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. One of my online pals who specializes in comic books and humor and TV writing and all kinds of stuff, a guy named Mark Evanier, is one of the people who does the commentary on It's a Mad, 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 Mad World on this Criterion edition. And what they have done is they have found every possible chunk of film from that hit the cutting room floor. It was in the original Roadshow premiere. And for the points that they couldn't find the film, they've still got the audio for some reason, but they have added still pictures that kind of give you a sense of what landed on the cutting room floor. Did you know that Buster Keaton was in that film? He's only seen in the edition, the Weeble Watch, maybe for 20 seconds. He had a much longer part the film. And everybody who was in comedy in that era, in the early 60s, was in that movie. I mean, and there's only like one or two of the minor characters who are still upright and above ground, which is sad. It's the ravages of time marching on. And speaking of which, you're overtime, so let me let you march on.
All right, Scott, you have yourself a good evening, and find a way to stay cool and comported.
Well, I'm headed down to Ralph's this evening when it cools down, and if it's still warm, I'll see how long I can sit in the among the frozen peas before the manager chases me out with his clipboard.
You know, frozen peas and carrots are pretty cheap. You could probably fill up a tub with them and just stick your feet in them and be okay. And
thought. Did you know that background actors in film scenes and TV scenes, that when you see them their mouths?
Yes, peas and carrots, carrots and peas, peas and carrots, carrots and peas.
Yeah, and if they do it convincingly, it looks like the people in the back of the cafe are having a jolly, happy little conversation with their table mates.
And so, I was told by an old hand once upon a time that back in the day when they made movies that would have groups of Asian people in it, that the Asian version of peas and carrots, carrots and peas, is you tie your shoes, I tie my tie, you tie your shoes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Where would we have seen that, I wonder?
How about that horrible Charlton Heston movie about the Boxer Rebellion?
I never saw that. I did see Soylent Green, which I thought was a great movie. I mean, you know, I met him once. I suppressed that memory until just recently. One of his sons apparently directed a film that he starred in the early 80s. And I went to a sneak preview of it. Nobody knew what it was. And it was after the regular feature. And then the lights came back up and Charlton Heston comes marching down the center aisle of the theater to welcome the people. And
was he carrying a gun?
No. I knew you were going to ask that, but no. And I believe his son was there. I forget which son it was. But
he had the same cadence for everything. Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape. And then there was, you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. And then from, I think it was Midway, talking to his son, you better watch your ass, mister, or some hot shot Jap pilot's going to flame your ass.
Yeah, well, he, you know, even as Moses, there wasn't much variation. You know, you'll take these tablets, you'll get these tablets when you take them from my cold dead hand. Jesus.
Yep.
All right, listen, I'm going to go.
All right, later, Scott. Goodbyes, you know. Take care.
All right, Bob. Take care, man. I'll see you.
Bye now. That's Scott calling from apparently what is a brutally warm San Diego. Let's see. Note coming in from Steve on the West Coast. The dead empire strikes out, or garbage pails ho. Don't mind me. This is just something I couldn't resist sending. Elon Musk wants us to know that his rocket is going to the moon and later to Mars. And I guess we're all invited for the tourism because that's what he says. He wants people to travel to those places. Yay! I don't know about you, but I'm so excited. Gosh, we sure do live in a world of wonders and possibilities, don't we? Miracles and wonders, miracles and wonders. It's 1952, or maybe 55 or 57. Gee willikers, who knows? I wonder how much one of the tickets in coach costs, or how much baggage I'll be able to bring on my spacey holiday. I also wonder whether anybody who flies coach will actually arrive at their destination, be it Luna 1 or Bradbury Mars Station. On the serious side, this is why we can all rest easy and trash the planet and burn down the Amazon and watch Miami Beach slip gracefully into the sea. Because at this rate, we'll surely be going to one of those faraway planets in another star system and living out our middle-class fantasies on a brand new blue ball that will love us and hate us and take excellent care of us. Yay! Kind of like that Avatar movie, but only in reverse. And us, not the losers, all sad faces and a burned-out garbage planet to slouch and slink back to. It also shows you with what utter contempt these silly, affected bastards hold the rest of the world in. The world isn't, that isn't, you know, them. Gosh, I sure do miss a national vision. And NASA. Yeah. And now NASA has discovered that they may have on their hands the first crime committed in space. Because a pair of an astronaut on the space station, a U.S. astronaut, you know, with the NASA patch and everything, was married to a woman back here on Earth. And while on the space station, she got into her estranged spouse's bank account and committed some, there's that word again, skullduggery with the couple's money. And the woman she was married to became much aggrieved and filed charges. And finally, from Lady B, what never ceases to amaze me is how ignorance and cluelessness is so highly regarded in this country. Some of it's due to financial privilege. Even more is due to just being the right color. Tens of thousands of Southern and Middle Americans telling us their beliefs on everything from the use of birth control to how man and dinosaurs coexisted. It's because of their power that we removed the true horrors and legacy of slavery from our history books, downplayed the importance of science, and convinced a majority of Americans that our jobs being shipped to foreign countries were the result of the foreigners themselves and not incredibly rich white people who have more regard for their own wallets than they do for other human beings. White supremacy has been allowed to burn like underground coal fires. Man, that what a great simile. Since the Civil War, the incredible thing is some of the greatest inventions we enjoy today are due to foreigners escaping the oppression of Europe and the world wars that ensued. We don't get to pick and choose the history that's only relevant to our interests. America is made up of foreigners. We don't get to call the shots on who's allowed to work. If having a good education and job was a requirement, a lot of Americans should be prepared to go back where they came from. Foreign workers do everything from programming computers, picking our kale in the hot sun, to wiping our asses in nursing homes. We're fucking hypocrites in search of a good takedown. And don't know how to solve this. I don't know how to solve the mass migration problems. But like Eddie Murphy says, we brought this shit on ourselves. You can't set fire to your neighbor's house and not expect them to show up on your porch. The world is on to our crap, and they're not backing down. The chickens are truly coming home to roost. There's not a word in that to argue with. You know, unless you're a maggot. And then it's just fake news. So, thanks for joining in this evening, or whenever it is you're joining in. Thank you so kindly. I hope you found it as enjoyable as I did. And I always find it enjoyable, except for, like, the tech gremlins part. Sorry about that. Who knows what that was about. Thanks to our subscribers and everybody who keeps the program on the air. We've done 20 extra minutes of fundraising free radio, and I like it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years, celebrating this year, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.